Sankhya philosophy continued. I thought I would start with something that would maybe make it a little more interesting. One of the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam, of the many descriptions, what Srimad Bhagavatam is, it is said that Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary by Vyasadeva on Vedanta Sutra. Brahma Sutra Bhasya. The Vedanta Sutra is a summary of all the Vedas in little capsule sutra forms, and speculators love it because they can go into a Vedanta Sutra, and since it's so puzzling, they can say, this means that. And then they construct their own ideology. And so, commentary on Vedanta Sutra is important, or it's more than important, it's essential for establishing a siddhanta, a comprehensive message of what the Vedas say. So each disciplic line has its commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not compile or order to be compiled a commentary on Vedanta Sutra because there was, already was one from Srimad Bhagavatam. Baladev Vidyabhusan, due to circumstances, made commentary for Govinda Bhasya. But it's already there. So anything that's in Govinda Bhasya is already there in Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the statement, Janmadhyasya Yataha, just as Vedanta Sutra begins. Janmadhyasya Yataha, so it's right there in the beginning. First verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. And so in that verse it's stating that Krishna is the absolute truth, that from which everything comes, because Vedanta Sutra begins by making the statement, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes, and the Bhagavatam is establishing that that's Krishna. Satyam Param Dhimahi. First verse. That begins and now it ends, and it's the Dhimahi, the meditation upon Satyam Param, the absolute truth. So, like we were discussing already yesterday, within the effect of the cause is present. There's difference between cause and effect, and there's inextricable identity between cause and effect. The cause is within the effect, even sometimes the effect is identified by the name of the cause. And Krishna is the original cause. He is the cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas, it's similar to Vedanta Sutra in that it has the truths of Srimad Bhagavatam compressed in 62 verses. I just do a little Brahma Samhita spin out here. In the very first verse, according to Jiva Goswami's commentary, is the principal utterance or Mahavakya of the whole Srimad Brahma Samhita, and then similarly the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam for that matter. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. You know the verse? So Krishna is the source of everything. He's the cause of all causes. That means he's present within the effect. There's no effect that exists separate from the cause. In fact, one of the four essential verses, Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam says, one of them says, whatever is perceived or seen or considered to have value separate from its source of emanation, Krishna, seeing like that, know that to be my illusory energy. Maya is seeing things disconnected from their source. So the spiritual potency is to see, or correct seeing is to see the effect connected to its cause. Sambandha, relationship between the effect and the cause. One of the Brahma Samhita verses, Tantasa koti shadavatsara sampragam yogayoratapi manasomani pungavanam. So, the absolute truth can't be known by mental speculation, but only by devotion, same as what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The mind does not have the capacity. Like the discussion yesterday about how do we understand these things, it's not with our mind. It's a descending process. And another Brahma Samhita verse that we sing every morning when we greet the deities. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashyanti panti kalyanti chiram jaganti. And the translation reads that he, not only his senses are interchangeable, but he eternally sees and manifests infinitary worlds, both spiritual and mundane.
Correct?
So, in earlier verse in Brahma Samhita, I'm becoming quite familiar with Brahma Samhita because I studied it carefully and spoke about it. It's really wonderful literature. In describing Goloka, that's the spiritual world, Goloka, where Krishna resides, Goloka Vrindavan, the second verse says that Goloka is manifested by the infinitary aspect of Krishna, Bhaktisiddhanta's language. The Sanskrit word is Ananta. So what is Ananta? We've read yesterday about Ananta. Ananta, Ananta Shesha, Sankarshan, these are different terms of the same being, same personality, same entity. So Balaram manifests the spiritual world by his Sandini potency. He not only the spiritual world, he manifests forms. He manifests as Krishna's chair, as Krishna's flute, as Krishna's clothing, even Krishna's Brahman thread. He manifests all the paraphernalia. That's the meaning of Ananta Shesha. Shesha is paraphernalia, unlimited paraphernalia, all manifested by him. But the verse, Hashyanti Panti Kalyanti Chiram Jaganti, he manifests unlimited material universes also. That's what the verse says. And the verse that we read yesterday in the Bhagavatam says Sankarshan, who is an expansion of Balaram, he manifests, as far as the material creation is concerned, he manifests the deduer, or the controlling demigods of the elements, the senses, and the objects of the senses. So that sounds different, doesn't it? It's Govinda is the cause of all causes. Sankarshan manifests these things. So, but Sankarshan is an expansion of Krishna, so it's not a wrong statement, it's just another statement. But what does Sankarshan or Balaram do? He does things through his potencies. So that's another way of describing things happen because of this potency, that potency. Now, supposing we're a materialistic or atheistic scientist, then we might study how the potencies interact and say, just see, this causes that. You don't need God. I'll show you in the laboratory. I'll do this experiment. This causes that. And where's God? There's no God in the picture here. So you theists, you know, you're silly. This causes that. Or mechanistic science says all there is one thing. There's matter and the laws that govern matter, and there's no second thing. Everything can be explained by matter and the laws governing matter. So you people over here that are religionists and theists, you're silly. Because there's only one thing. And they're very determined about it. And they're very well funded. So, Krishna is the cause, Sankarshan is the cause, and then there's these energies, where the energies are the cause. And one of the energies is false ego. And then, you know, false ego mixing with the modes of nature. And the false ego mixing with the modes of nature produce senses. They're the instruments. And then they produce objects of the senses. Matter, the material ingredients, depending upon the modes of nature interacting with false ego. They're not, this one's right and that one's wrong and the other one's also wrong. They're all right. Just different ways of explaining the same thing. And ultimately, this cause and effect has its original cause, which has no prior cause. That's our teaching. And then you can break down the cause and effect relationship. And I'm going to share with you one of them from Brahma Samhita. Text number 7, Brahma Samhita, states, Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy, still her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. Couldn't be. When he, Mahavishnu, intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the diluting energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity or secondary activity. So the primary is Mahavishnu consorts or associates with his internal potency, Rama. And she's within him, as opposed to outside, like, you know, a second form. When you think of any paintings that you, or depictions you've seen of Mahavishnu, where's Rama? You don't see Rama, because she's within. So another name is Yoganidra. It's Rama, where Mahavishnu is consorting with Rama, enjoying amorous pastimes, eternal pastimes internally, while he's doing that, he desires creation, and so he glances. By casting his glance at the diluting energy in the shape of sending his time energy is an auxiliary activity. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta's language is, not easy to understand, but the last sentence, he repeats this point and then expands it. So the time energy has sub-energies. From Bhaktisiddhanta's purport. The diluting energy, as the maidservant of the spiritual chit potency, Rama, serves the manifested plenary portion of Godhead, that's Mahavishnu, the material energy serves Mahavishnu, who consorted with Rama. The time energy representing the force of activity and instrumentality of Rama. The force of activity is Kriya Shakti, and instrumentality is Icha Shakti. I'll say it again because it's important. It's going to show up in today's verse. Kriya Shakti. Kriya means activity, to do. So Kriya Shakti is the Lord's spiritual potency, that's the force of activity. You don't have activity without the force of activity. Without Kriya Shakti, things don't happen. We'll hear it in today's verse. And there's instrumentality. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Things don't happen unless the Lord wills them to happen. Correct? Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So that sanction of the Supreme Lord is his Icha. Icha means desire. And when Krishna desires something, it happens. He didn't have to do anything, he just desires. So he had this desire. The verse says he had a desire that material creation should happen. He didn't do anything. But Rama, his internal potency, knew the desire of her master, the Lord, and she has sub-potency, so her time energy was entrusted to the glance, and that's time energy has sub-potencies. Her Kriya Shakti and her Icha Shakti manifesting the will or Icha of her master. You with me? You probably know this verse because it's quoted again and again. Krishna has unlimited potencies. What's the verse that we hear Prabhupada quote when he speaks about that? Parasya Shakti Vividaiva Shruyate Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. Sounds familiar? And that's found in both Kena Upanishad and Manduka Upanishad. It's twice. Same verse. Exact same verse. It's an Upanishadic verse, that text that impersonalists really like, the Upanishads, and they interpret them, specifically describes the absolute truth has potencies. Well, impersonalists don't like that, because you have potencies and the source of potencies, then you have two things. They don't like that. So they just collapse it. You just have one thing. Brahman. And Brahman is without potencies. But that verse explicitly says Brahman or Parabrahman, Bhagavan, has unlimited potencies, and chief of which are these three. Amongst them are jnana, bala, and kriya. So bala, shakti, spiritual strength. Spiritual strength, what is that spiritual strength? Mahavishnu desires, let there be creation. Rama Devi takes care of it. She also has potency. His will is her will. That's love. So, and she has power to carry that out, her own Ichha Shakti, and it's there, those are sub-potencies within the time energy. Then the time energy is extended and starts to mix with the material energy or pradhan, and then things start to happen because there's kriya shakti and ichha shakti, and doesn't mention it, but jnana shakti also. That's a detail I don't need. It comes later, where jnana shakti starts to show influence. It's related to today's verse. You'll see. Jnana Shakti. Directly. It's in today's verse. But they're already there. This is before the Mahatattva starts to differentiate or separate out. It's pradhan, and zoom, there goes the Lord's glance, and with the Lord's glance, living entities, and time energy with these subpotencies. So, according to the Lord's plan, a false ego separates out first. I went back and read those verses. And then the modes of nature become agitated because previously they were inactive. There's no living entities, there's no time. The modes are there, inert. Now here comes time, living entities, they become activated. Then according to the different modes, mixing with false ego, other things start to appear. So this is a description of shaktis causing other shaktis. But behind those shaktis is Shaktiman. Previous verse we read yesterday, it's Sankarshan. But Sankarshan is carrying out things because of the will of Krishna. Are you with me? That's what Sankhya is. The purpose of Sankhya is not just like the question yesterday about Sankhya and Buddhi. One who is fixed with spiritual understanding, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamo Piyantite, one can understand how to go to Krishna through Buddhi. And that Krishna directly gives Buddhi. That's uncontaminated spiritual intelligence. That's what Buddhi is. But then there's another kind, and that's the contaminated kind, where the intelligence is how to fulfill material desires, desires for sense gratification, desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. Material intelligence is needed for that. We have so many universities all over the place, all over the world, to help people fulfill desires for sense gratification. You get trained up how to fulfill desires for sense gratification in different ways. So we heard about mode of goodness mixing with false ego and getting the material mind, and the material mind has different functions, accepting and rejecting, or determination and rejection language here. which are due to different kinds of desires. So behind the accepting, rejecting is, I want sense gratification. I want separate enjoyment from Krishna, please. So, material energy awards. The mind that thinks, contemplates on which type of sense gratification do I want. And then to get the sense gratification you want, you need material intelligence. So, we read that also. By the transformation of false ego and passion, intelligence takes birth, O virtuous lady. The functions of intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects when they come into view, and to help the senses. So we read that. Now this morning's verse, text 31. All of that was just to make this more interesting, more relatable. Hope you keep you awake a little better. So you'll just be discussing verse 31, one verse, Canto 3, Chapter 26. What did egoism in the mode of passion generated intelligence and the functions of intelligence? It's going to generate some other things. Egoism in the mode of passion produces two kinds of senses. The senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses of action. The senses of action depend on the vital energy, prana. And the senses for acquiring knowledge depend on intelligence. So the Sanskrit, pranashahi kriya shakti. Hey, there's kriya shakti. And then bhutir vijnana shakti ta. Hey, there's jnana shakti. There's a connection. Those potencies, kriya shakti, jnana shakti, they were made available within the field of the material energy by the glance of Mahavishnu, and entrusted in that glance of Mahavishnu, Rama Devi passed on the time energy that has these sub-energies, Kriya Shakti, Bala Shakti, or Icha Shakti, as we heard from Bhakti Siddhanta, and Jnana Shakti. So now, false ego, mixing with passion, makes this very nice connection. That is, the senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses of action are now connecting with these two potencies. To move the senses of work, we need Kriya Shakti. To move the senses of acquiring knowledge, you need Jnana Shakti. Zoom, zoom, zoom. It's like assembling motor parts. I've never been in an automobile factory, but Prabhupada uses this example. The Mahatattva is like unassembled motor parts in a factory. This is still speaking of of the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the part of creation that Vishnu does, and there's the part of creation that Brahma does. You know what those two terms are? Creation that Vishnu does and the creation that Brahma does. Sarga and Visarga. This is still speaking Sarga. That isn't the assembly of the motor parts. It's providing the motor parts. That's Vishnu. He's making the elements for creation available for Brahma to put them together. And he's doing so through his various potencies. That's what we're hearing. It's one of the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. Purport has 2 paragraphs. I'll read the first one. It has been explained in the previous verses that mind is the product of ego in goodness, and that the function of the mind is acceptance and rejecting according to desire. It's like this is a little review. But here, intelligence is said to be the product of ego in passion. That's the distinction between mind and intelligence. Semicolon. Mind is a product of egoism and goodness, and intelligence is a product of egoism and passion. The desire to accept something and reject something is a very important factor of the mind. Since mind is the product of the mode of goodness, if it is fixed upon the Lord of the mind, Aniruddha, then the mind can be changed to Krishna consciousness. Remember from previous discussion, rainwater that falls, it's distilled, it's pure. When it touches the earth, it becomes muddy. So this is the extraction of the mud process. Consciousness is pure. It touches these things. Living entity has been injected into the pradhan. It touches these things and consciousness becomes contaminated. The mind becomes polluted. So how do we unpollute the mind, fix the mind upon Aniruddha, or the personality Godhead, that restores Krishna consciousness? So that's our program, restoring Krishna consciousness. It is stated by Narottama Das Thakur that we always have desires. Desires cannot be stopped. But if we transfer our desires to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the perfection of life. So behind the mind and its functioning of accepting, rejecting is desires. So purify them. Desire in relation to Krishna's happiness, that's bhakti. As soon as the desire is transferred to lording it over material nature, it becomes contaminated by matter. The rainwater falling and mixing with earth becomes muddy. Desire has to be purified. In the beginning, this purification process has to be carried out by the order of the spiritual master, since the spiritual master knows how the disciple's desires can be transformed into Krishna consciousness. Sadhana bhakti. As far as intelligence is concerned, it is clearly stated here that it is a product of egoism and passion. By practice, one comes to the point of the mode of goodness, and by surrendering or fixing the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes a very great personality or mahatma. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said, some mahatma, sadurlabha, such a great soul is very rare. End of paragraph. So there are these two things, mind and intelligence. We know from chapter 12, the perfection is mind always fixed upon me, intelligence always engaged in serving me. Such a great soul lives with me always without a doubt. Next paragraph. In this verse, it is clear that both kinds of senses, the senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses for action, are products of egoism in the mode of passion, and because the sense organs for activity and for acquiring knowledge require energy. It said it produces the senses, but now they have to be propelled. The vital energy or life energy is also produced by egoism in the mode of passion. or the produced by or combine those potencies with the senses to drive them, or produced by them, either way. We can actually see, therefore, that those who are very passionate can improve in material acquisition very quickly. It is recommended in Vedic scriptures that if one wants to encourage a person in acquiring material possessions, one should also encourage him in sex life. We find that those who are addicted to sex life are also materially advanced, because sex life or passionate life is the impetus for material advancement of civilization. For those who want to make spiritual advancement, there is almost no existence of the mode of passion. Only the mode of goodness is prominent. We find that those who engage in Krishna consciousness are materially poor. But one who has eyes can see who is the greater. Although he appears to be materially poor, a person in Krishna consciousness is not actually a poor man. But the person who has no taste for Krishna consciousness and appears to be very happy with material possessions is actually poor. Persons infatuated by material consciousness are very intelligent in discovering things for material comforts, but they have no access to understanding the spirit soul and spiritual life. Therefore, if anyone wants to advance in spiritual life, he has to come back to the platform of purified desire. The purified desire for devotional service. Last sentence. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, engagement in the service of the Lord when the senses are purified in Krishna consciousness is called pure devotion. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevana, that verse. Part of what Sankhya does is it explains how it works that engagement in devotional service results in what it results in. Results in purified consciousness, purified senses, purified mind. And the absence of devotional service, what's the situation? Spiritual knowledge is obscured. One cannot understand. So its impetus, it's not bhakti in itself, it's impetus for bhakti. It lends support to bhakti, but without bhakti, it's ineffective. Without bhakti, it can lead one away from Krishna, Sankhya. One can become an impersonalist. I'm just going to end with reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse, text 31. The verse starts with the word Tajasani Indriyani Eva. So Tajasani, Prabhupada has translated it in his word for word. Tajasani means produced from egoism in the mode of passion. Rajas, or it could be Rajasani, Tejasani. Produced from egoism in the mode of passion. Indriyani Eva. So the senses, and there's two kinds, knowledge, acquiring, and the working senses. The next line is Kriya Jnana Vibhagashaha. Kriya Jnana Vibhagashaha. Vibhagasha means according to. So according to whether it's the Kriya Shakti or the Jnana Shakti, it produces working senses or knowledge acquiring senses. The next, Prana Shahi Kriya Shaktir Buddhir Vijnana Shaktita. The senses for acquiring knowledge depend on intelligence. The senses for acquiring knowledge depend upon intelligence. The intelligence that was, well, for material intelligence, intelligence that's produced from false ego and passion. But that the contaminated state that's giving the motor parts for the machine of the material body for Lord Brahma to assemble. I mean, pretty amazing factory Brahma has, or the engineer to design creating life from the elements, motor parts. I'll end with this. You may have heard me say this before. Some time ago, 20 years ago, something like that, the Bhaktivedanta Institute in Berkeley invited a Nobel laureate in physics, Professor Henry Staff, S-T-A-P-H, you can look it up later, to take a sabbatical. He received some grant money, and he went from Berkeley to Bombay, with their branch in Bombay, and he spent a month and a half studying Sankhya philosophy directly from Prabhupada's writings. And the assignment was, see if you find anything in Sankhya philosophy that is falsifiable. Falsifiability is a scientific term. It doesn't prove something is exactly wrong, but it, at least within existing empirical evidence, it cannot be because there's observable something that says it can't be like this because it's therefore falsifiable. It doesn't say this is right, it just says from our empiric evidence, it appears it cannot be correct. And the gentleman was indeed a gentleman. He was very austere. He was up before the devotees were up, from what they said. You know, and the place where he stayed was overlooking the temple room. So when he got up in the morning, he was up before Mangalarti, and he, from his window, could see Mangalarti every morning for a month and a half. And then he, you know, did his studies all day long, morning till night, you know, very intense, powerful personality. And the conclusion was, there's nothing within Sankhya philosophy that's falsifiable by anything he's aware of in the field of modern science. Didn't say it's right. Then he wrote a, you know, little booklet, the Bhaktivedanta Institute published it. So, is there God or not? Is there a cause of all causes or not? Is there an absolute truth from which everything comes or not? Is that absolute truth matter and the laws governing matter and there's nothing else and that's the absolute truth? Sankhya doesn't say that. There's the cause of matter and the laws governing matter and those who, personalities who oversee the laws. They generate the matter and the senses and so forth. So it's quite a different picture. And one is atheistic and the other is theistic. You know, especially in the educated circles in which you move, besides like some faith and the basic understanding of there's God, there's Krishna, and we worship Him, it may strengthen your convictions and your position to know Sankhya philosophy. And somebody says, you know, I'm a scholar and I'm a scientist and there's no God. You'll know better, not just because somewhere in there it says it, although I don't know what it says, I just know it says it. You can know what it says. How, although it's like remote control, matter is controlled, not like the watchmaker, like we discussed yesterday. The mechanistic view of, okay, there's God, but after creation, that's it. He doesn't have anything to do with it. Like the watchmaker makes a watch, somebody buys the watch, and that's it. It's on its own. He's involved in every minute aspect of creation, and maintenance, and dissolution, and its resting, and again creation. Through his potencies, so we're hearing about his potencies, but they're not acting independently, they're acting according to this icha and kala, etc. And there's different, it's a very fascinating topic, but how time acts differently in higher regions, intermediate regions, and lower regions. It's the same time energy, but it acts differently. According to the consciousness of the living entity and their guna and karma. It acts differently, although it's the same time. And ultimately, that time energy is eternal. Although there's this appearance of something other than eternal, like past, present, or future kind of time that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Time is conspicuous by its absence. It's eternal time. Time as we know it is conspicuous by its absence. So it's fascinating. It's complex. It's puzzling. But it's the absolute truth being explained by the personality of Godhead, Kapila Dev, to his mother Devahuti, and that therefore to us. As you observe something moving over here, and behind the something that's moving, there's a cause of that movement. So there's an immediate cause, and there are different kinds of causes, and there's an ultimate cause. And Sankhya is helping us understand some of those cause-effect relationships. From a personal conception of the Absolute Truth perspective. Any discussion? There are different features we know from chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, there's modes of nature. And according to the modes of nature, the modes of nature affect matter differently. Let's say color. The walls are a cream color. But if the walls were bright red or the walls were black, it's just a wall, it's just paint. But it's the modes of nature are active and present. Although it's just dull matter. Similarly, as with paint on the walls, so also with false ego. There is false ego. It's an element. It's one of the 24 elements. The modes of nature are not one of the 24 elements. There's 24 elements. And as the modes of nature affect the influence of the paint on the wall on our consciousness, false ego is an element, one of the 24. And according to the modes of nature, false ego may act this way, that way, or the other way. So they're inextricable, but they're distinct. Modes of nature are not false ego. False ego is not the modes of nature. False ego is one of the 24 elements, influenced by different modes and mixtures of those modes. Yes? The two scenarios are clear, and so your question specifically is, how do I know who to trust? Which is the correct pramana? In which pramana should I invest faith or confidence or trust? Well, there's different ways of answering that question. But one very simple way of answering that question is by use of common sense or reason and logic. The senses are infallible. Our senses are fallible, and reasoning power is fallible. With my reasoning power, I can understand reasoning power is fallible. In other words, so gathering information, this is the method of science, is gathering information and analyzing the information, reaching conclusions. The senses are imperfect, the reasoning process is imperfect. So whatever is created is imperfect. Okay, so let me put that on hold for a moment, put that over here. If there is such a thing, hypothetical, if there is such a thing as a perfect person, best is to think the closest way to get perfect knowledge is from that source. Is there such a thing? I have some preliminary faith. There must be something more than this other thing. And the other thing doesn't, it's not compelling. So let me explore this other thing. basic faith, a dharma-shraddha. And then if one is fortunate enough to contact a genuine sadhu, then one can go further in that progression of faith, preliminary faith. But I'm sitting in the classroom of the university, or with my textbooks from the university, or the body of knowledge from science that says this is inconceivable, but we'll give you an explanation since we're very elevated and we can explain the inconceivable to you. It may be, fascinating, captivating, charming, but guaranteed to be fallible. So that's one answer to your question. I don't know for sure about the Shabda Praman, but I know that Pratyaksha Praman and Anuman Praman, that doesn't hold the answer. And therefore, I'll spend time over here with Shabda Praman. I'm not saying I accept it. That may or may not be. I don't know. Preliminary faith. Anything? Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for that.